Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, today we're continuing our top albums of the 2010s. We've already heard on the last episode our bottom five, but now it's time to hear about our top five. So here we go.
Winter culture.
Number five.
Here we go. What is it?
It's Richard Dawson, Peasant.
Was he the singer of the Verve?
No, who's that? Richard Ashcroft.
Yeah. No, sorry. He was the one that he did the God the God book.
Richard Dawkins.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Dawkins.
And he was the singer for the Verve.
Lord.
Wasn't
I should
he
have just said Dawson?
Wasn't his daughter wasn't his daughter in Extras?
Come on. Let's have a daughter in Extras.
It wasn't his daughter. You know in Extras where they did the sitcom after Happy Hour, or whatever the fuck it was called, the sitcom in the show.
Yeah. When the whistle blows.
Bloody hell, good memory. Who was the main woman on that? That was Lisa Tarbuck.
Les Dawson?
That was Lisa Tarbuck. I'm thinking of... who was her dad?
Jimmy Tarbuck.
That's right.
Who was friends with Les Dawson? Is it Lisa Tarbuck? Okay. I just want to clear something up. This has nothing to do with Liza Tarbuck, Jimmy Tarbuck, When the Whistle Blows, Extras, Ricky Gervais, The Verve, or Richard Dawkins, or The God Complex.
Right. Not just connected.
British.
Just coincidence.
Folk rock.
So, sorry, tell me about Richard Ashcroft's album.
So sometimes he's just known by Dawson.
Dawson.
So maybe that'll make it easier for you.
Dawson's Creek. Okay.
Because the Richard thing seems to be...
throwing me.
Yeah. It's quite a popular name.
Dickie Dawson.
I struggled a little bit to go and pick which album, because the first time I heard him was The Magic Bridge, which came out 2011. So Dawson, he's from Newcastle, and I know some guys up in Durham that are from Newcastle. And when I was in the band with Ben, Pelican Daughters, we went up and used the studio to record our album.
Right.
And they just kept going on about Dawson, and one of them just gave me a copy of The Magic Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really affecting, idiosyncratic folk, like very traditional, you know, just him and his guitar, but the guitar sounds really strange.
Right.
And the way he sings is really strange. And he kind of like documents very, it's very typical, like vignettes of British life.
Right.
You know, he takes this like traditional kind of folk singer approach to writing songs about modern society. So, like in a bit, like, you know, like an artist like Grayson Perry, you know, uses like traditional like pottery and tapestry, but then does it all about like people being on the dole and, you know, modern issues. It's that. It's like a folk singer of like modern issues like that.
I'm just not familiar with him whatsoever, I don't think.
That's the Magic Bridge. But yeah, I've gone with Peasant from 2017. And actually the album he did last year called 2020 was really good. He started introducing some like kind of like synthesizer stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
But Peasant for me, it's really like, I think it's his most intense album.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to kind of theme it around like medieval village.
Right.
So it's all like these sort of songs and all the characters are about what it would be like to be in some like medieval times. So all the songs are like herald, soldier, weaver, prostitute, scientist, this kind of thing.
Lovely.
But he really, like, he works up a storm. You know, it's like him, he's like hammering on this guitar. And it's all been like recorded quite intimately. And it sounds huge. And it just sounds like the whole thing's going to break and like his voice is going to break. It's kind of like it's hearty, lusty, passionate stuff. And I just think there's nothing really else quite like it out there.
Should we listen to a track of it?
Unique artist. Yeah, let's go with some scientist.
Okay, let's check it out. Of him, done anything about him, so give it a whirl,
give it a go. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely going to be one of those things where it's not for everyone. Like I said, like his voice is quite unique, idiosyncratic, but yeah, his playing style, it's so, it builds up and builds up, and I think it's quite epic.
Interesting.
And this is a nice, you know, this is the first time I think he did a kind of like a, you know, a concept kind of album themed around this medieval thing. It's like an hour long of just incredible music.
I love how unassuming he looks as well.
Yeah, just some guy with a beard.
Yeah, literally. Nothing to him whatsoever. That's good though, I like that. Okay, cool. Well, I'll move on to my number five album, which is Aerial Pink, dedicated to Bobby Jameson.
Woohoo!
In 2017, and I, well, kind of a bit of a spoiler, I don't think it's the better Aerial Pink album that's released in the last decade, but I was tempted to leave it off, but were it not for the fact that it was like my second highest played album of that decade, and I thought that's got to be worth something in itself. And I think it still got some really like super strong tracks, and I was looking at the albums on here and I was like, it's still better. Like, you know, I know you were saying about the law of choosing two out of, sorry, of only choosing one album per artist, but I was like,
yeah,
can't do it with this one. I was like, I can't leave it off. And I think it's also, there's something to it where it's the fact that each album of his, and bear in mind, he's released a lot of albums still in the last decade. These are only like his like proper studio albums. He still releases stuff all the time. He recently just released like what was it? Like 30 just shit things that he had just had lying around. He just releases it anyway. Constantly releasing singles, doing team ups with different, you know, people or whatever. He's constantly releasing music. But in terms of like sitting down and actually doing an album, you know, with a band basically properly rather than him in his bedroom. It just shows like, you know, what he can kind of do with it. And yeah, each one of his albums always feels like for the most part, especially these days, very unique. And unique in a way that it's kind of ripping off other artists and it's kind of like parodying some other stuff, or it's just like this mishmash of stuff that he's listened to in the past or he likes or he's been listening to, and it just kind of all gets fuses together in this weird, weird amalgamation. And that's what I really like about it.
Likewise.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's just a cool sound. And I know that whole like part of the kind of extra bandmate who's on these albums is the production itself, a kind of lo-fi cassette kind of sound, even with, you know, and that's what's funny, like the fact they're going to these big, well, big, I don't know what studios they go to, but it's, you know, in a studio and do all these bits and pieces and yet run it through so that it makes sure it kind of sounds like it's still coming out of your crappy 80s, like, tape machine.
That's the thing with him. You know, people do say it's like lo-fi, but it's highly produced to sound like that, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Like obviously, his earlier stuff was
lo-fi. Was that? Naturally, anyway, yeah.
This like last run of actual studio albums sound amazing.
Yeah, very good. And it was always one of those things where, from like, well, basically Pom Pom, it was like, well, how do you kind of follow this? And he did it. And I remember like Time to Live or whatever, Time for Life, the first track basically, was the first single released from the album. It wasn't, well, if you can call it a single, it was the first release, let's say, the first listen to the album. And I remember listening to that just going like, this is still incredible, even though it kind of rips off Video Killed the Radio Star a little bit at the end and a couple of other things. I was like, man, if this is going to, album's going to sound like this, it's going to be amazing. And basically it did, in a sense of each song sounds different, but it's all that same kind of stuff. And just the whole story about the fact of like Bobby Jameson, because I never heard of him. And it was only through this album that I actually Googled what he was about and all this stuff and how he was, you know, kind of this musician who was highly talented, but like left in the dirt or whatever and all this bollocks. And yeah, all that stuff's just like super interesting. And it's like, you know, he doesn't, that's all it took. It's really weird. Just the whole thing's weird. And that's why I like it. Cause it's just, Ariel Pink's just such a weird bloke and it's perfect.
That Bobby Jameson album's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I haven't actually listened to any of the music.
I did some, you know, nosing around and ended up listening to it. It's worth checking out.
Yeah, I should do. I know he's got that. It's got like a YouTube series or something where he talks about his life, but I've not seen that either. Yeah, I think that's kind of how he met a second wind, and a lot of musos, I think, were sharing it with each other. Whatever. But yeah, so that's my number five, Ariel Pink, dedicated to Bobby Jameson. So,
good pick.
Yeah, let's go into your number four. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to add something. I think Another Weekend's probably like my most played song of the last 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, that's the song that I love the most on this album.
Yeah.
There's some really weird like time stuff going on in the middle of it, and everything about the structure is totally bizarre. And it's just got a vibe that isn't, as it's not been captured in any other song that I can think of.
No, I think there's an element to him and his songwriting where it's like he almost gets immediately bored of his own songs or like where a song is going.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I know there's, you know, he kind of talks about how a lot of his songs are just, he's constantly writing stuff And he'll just pick stuff from other bits or like something he recorded like fucking 5 years ago, or whatever. And then I'll just stick this bit here or whatever. And
yeah,
all these bits. And it's, you know, cause he's always constantly trying to come up with ideas. And I think he's, the way he's so prolific is quite inspiring because, you know, yeah, we've talked about it before, where it's an element of like the reason why, well, me personally, but like, you know, a lot of people kind of seem to share this sentiment. The case of like not releasing stuff was because, well, it needs to sound like perfect. And it's like, well, it doesn't, does it? Because his stuff, like, you know, you listen to like the Doldrums is still, I still listen to that. I probably listen to that just as much, if not maybe even more than this album. And that is the most lo-fi, shittily recorded thing ever. Yeah. And that's why it inspires me basically to think like,
yeah,
if it's a good song or whatever, it will still kind of come through.
Yeah, do it, get it out.
Yeah.
You can always re-record it down the line,
yeah,
when you've got some money behind you.
Exactly.
Because yeah, there's some old songs on here, actually.
Hmm.
I think, I can't remember which ones. I think I Want to Be Young is like quite an old song.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Offhand. The thing is, there's so many, like, every time I do like a bit of a dive on Ariel Pink, I scratch the surface a little bit more, and then there's like a new cave of like
so much
stuff. And I'm like, oh, I don't know where I'm going to start with this. It's like tidying up an attic or something. You're just like, well, what do I listen to? And then you end up just listening to hours and hours of like thoughts or whatever. And that's why I quite like these albums particularly, because it really is like the cream of the stuff that he's done and doing. And you're right. Yeah, he does kind of dredge up stuff from the past or stuff he's released before and put a different sheen on it or use it as something else.
Reposition it.
Yeah.
There's some really good bonus tracks around this album as well. I just was a little bit disappointed that May the Music Never Die didn't end up on the album. It was on that bonus EP thing.
Yeah, you sent it to me.
Because I like that because, you know, I like Deerhoof and it's got Satomi singing on it from Deerhoof.
Right.
And I think Greg might have done something on it as well. So, oh well.
Yeah. It's a bit weird because it was a Japanese, as you said, Japanese bonus thing, right? But it was only on the vinyl or something, was that right?
Yeah, they did a package where like if you buy the vinyl, you could buy this picture disc bonus EP with four extra songs. And it was really expensive.
Yeah.
It was so expensive. So I didn't get it. But yeah, you can find the songs elsewhere.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Okay. Let's get on to your number cuatro.
Okay. So yeah, my number four is by a band. I don't know anything about them. Go Go Penguin.
Hmm.
And this album's called V2 from 2014, probably the second album.
Mm-hmm.
I never bothered to, I did go back and download their first album, but I never really listened to it properly. But for some reason, I just keep coming back to this one, V2, and listening to it over and over again. I found it really relaxing and really, really intricate and interesting.
Right.
Should we give a 1% a listen?
Okay, yeah, let's check it out.
So I think these guys, I don't know like how they're perceived or how well they're known or anything, but I imagine they're kind of underrated. It's really interesting, kind of like jazz. It's jazz, essentially, but it reminds me of some of like Radiohead's stuff. It's very, you know, it's very accessible, poppy, and you've got this really cool drumming going on that, again, is starting to veer towards some of that, like I said earlier, the motoric krautrock style of bands like Beak. It's jazz, but it's kind of like pop fusion jazz. And it's just really, you can put it on and it takes you on a journey, pretty relaxing, but it's also like exciting and kind of cool.
Right. I've not heard of it. I don't know literally anything about it.
I don't know how I discovered it. I think it was like at the end of every year, like you said, you know, I do a little bit of a sweep of the lists and see if I missed anything. And I think it was just recommended through that. And I just loved it. And I keep coming back to it. Every couple of years, I think, oh, I should give that Coco Penguin album another listen.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. They're from Manchester.
I'll check it out. Yeah, what kind of stuff did you say it was? You find it relaxing? Jazzy kind of?
Yeah, it's like kind of ambient experimental jazz, but it's pretty digestible, really. It's kind of like, I suppose structurally, it's quite poppy.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I have to give that a look.
Let's have a look here. Critics have described their music with references to Aphex Twin, Squarepusher, Brian Eno, Massive Attack, and minimal music composers like Philip Glass.
Bloody hell. Okay. Yeah, it sounds like it might be a tougher listen.
It's really not. I think you might like it if you want to have something like kind of chilled out and pretty cool in the background.
Well, I do like my chill.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I guess we'll kind of move on to my number four, which is Kurt Vile, Smoke Ring for My Bumhole. I mean Halo. Smoke Ring for My Halo. So yeah, 2011, this was released. And yeah, do you know anything about Kurt Vile or heard this album or whatever?
No, not a lot.
He's a bit passé now, I'd probably say, because I feel like it's been done. It's kind of riding a little bit on the Bon Iver kind of stuff. And he was in a band called War on Drugs, which, you know, did quite well after this as well.
It's that guy.
Yeah, and he's got like really long curly hair. And he's done some other bits and pieces, but I don't know if this was his first album actually when I think about it, but you know when you like you hear something and you think, this is what I want to hear right now, and I didn't even know it. That makes sense. So I think I was going through like another I was doing more acoustic-y kind of stuff anyway. And then I was listening to, like, I remember, I think Red Dead Redemption had just come out, or maybe it came out like the year before, whatever. And I was kind of listening to more like Western-y kind of music just off the back of that randomly. And I was doing this thing called Day Road West, which is a bit Western-y. And I never really released any. I think I released like one track. There's about 20 tracks I need to actually do. But and I remember when I listened to Kurt Vile, I was like, this is the sound that I want, not necessarily his voice or anything like that, but like it sounds like it's very intimate. It's quite a lot of reverb still to it. It sounds still country and western, but it's still like cool songs. It's not like country western songs. But the way he kind of sings and what he does with his like voice, which sounds quite natural but still somehow unnatural. And the way he like, you know, turns a phrase and the melody kind of reaches alongside normally, which is just very simple acoustic playing with like, you know, the drums are quite muted. He's got other bits in there, whatever, but it never feels like overpowering or anything like that. It feels very small and yet big at the same time. And yeah, I don't know. There's something very personal about it, and endearing. And I think it's the warmth. It sounds like it's like a thing you'd walk into like a bar, wherever it'd be playing on a vinyl, or you'd be, you know, at the back of a stage somewhere. Do you know what I mean? There's people like sitting around in like a cowboy-esque type Texan bar or something, like drinking a whiskey. I don't know what the fuck they do. And it's got that kind of vibe to it. So it feels like there's just like, it's a little like peep into this weird world, which I've like almost filled with my own brain. And this is kind of like the soundtrack to it. And that's why it made number four.
If I've listened to The War on Drugs and didn't like them and found them kind of, yeah, am I going to like Kurt Vile?
Yeah, it's different. So like early War on Drugs is a bit more Kurt Vile-ish, but the stuff that you probably would have heard of them.
That one that everyone said was the best album.
To be honest, I don't mind War on Drugs, but I'm like, it's a bit like Broken Social Scene a little bit. Don't know why. It's kind of a weird comparison, but it's the way it's so like kind of trying to be Bruce Springsteen and all that, fine. And I don't mind that. Kurt Vile is like, it feels very much like I'm Kurt Vile and here's what I'm singing about and it's to you. And I like that more rather than this like kind of very, this band of like the panache, whatever, War on Drugs. It feels very like shiny almost, whereas this feels more like warm. It's like a matte effect rather than a gloss effect.
Oh, nice.
I mean, like literally listen to like the first track, and if it's not for you, then it won't be for you because the whole album's basically like that. But I really liked it. And I thought I listened to it a lot at the time, still listen to it now. And I like going back to it. And there's like, as I said, there's a kind of a warmth and a personal kind of connection almost with it for some weird reason.
Cool. Kurt Vile, Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. So what's your number three?
Yeah, top three.
Oh, yeah, we're here.
Any of these three could have been my number one, really. It's really difficult to rank them at this point. But I've gone for Swans. I've gone for what is considered probably their weakest of the albums that they've done in the decade, which was their return album, My Father Will Guide Me Up a Rope to the Sky.
Lovely.
And let's hear You Fucking People Make Me Sick. What is mine? What I like about Swans in this incarnation especially is that they've retained a lot of the elements of classic Swans, which for me really is some of the like brutality and built on repetition. But they've added in elements of some of the projects that happened while they were, you know, on hiatus.
Right.
Like Angels of Light, this more kind of like attempt to bring in more beauty, but while it's still quite intense. So this felt like a continuation of that before we got to like the Seer and, you know, these three then albums that they did that were all really long, like 2 hours long each.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so intense. The Seer, To Be Kind, and the Glowing Man. Amazing albums, but how many times do I actually sit down and listen to those albums?
Right.
Not that many times. And you can't really pick any of the songs from those. Like they're 2 hour listening experiences. Whereas this, you know, it's a bit more digestible, a bit more accessible. So I listen to this a lot more. you know, like the longest song here is 9 minutes, whereas the longest song on those other albums can be like 28 minutes long.
Right.
Anyway, like there's still like a really nice, like rich diversity of sounds on here, and instrumentation. You've even got like a jaw harp or a jute harp on some of these songs, which is kind of cool. Like if people don't know Swans, I think at this point they start to sound a bit to me like Nick Cavey.
Okay.
But to me, it kind of like it's even blacker and more bitter. And when it chooses to be more beautiful.
Nice. Just like so it's, your bottom.
Yeah. This is what I like. I like the brutality with the beauty. And it all sounds very like the cover is like this kind of like cosmic thing in space.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. It's like a sort of spiritual, almost cosmic experience.
Yeah. Interesting.
Have you listened to this album?
No, I don't think so. Again, we kind of speak about Swans and I've still not, I've only dipped my toe in really. I've not gone full hog. But they do interest me. And I love the fact, as you said, they've been around for like ever. I like that. I think as I'm getting older, I like the idea of old people still, rocking and still releasing stuff.
And doing their best work.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Again, I need to kind of check all this stuff out. I mean, that's why I always like, doing these things with you, because there's always that element of quite different and what we actually listen to on a day-to-day basis, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's always quite interesting just to hear what's going on the other side of everything.
On the dark side.
On the dark side, yeah. Okay, well, yeah, number three on my one, the bronze, if you will, is Idols, Joy as an Act of Resistance. So this shot up the list the last few months because when I first heard them, I think I said this on the podcast as well back in the day, I was like, I can't remember what it was, someone from uni or whatever was like, oh, you'd love them, you love this band. And I hate it when sometimes, people say that, because it's like, oh, what is it then? It's going to be like a depressing sounding band or someone that's just like straight up punk or whatever. So sometimes depending on who's saying it, I go in listening to something with some bias already.
Yeah,
like I'm already going in thinking I don't want to like it because I don't want to be predictable.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't want people just knowing things that I like. You don't know what I like. So I always find it quite funny because it's such a dick way to think about stuff as well, but I can't help it. It's subconscious. And so the guy's like just, trying to be nice. And
you think you know me?
You don't know me. Yeah, exactly. You don't know me. And I listened to it and I remember thinking it sounded like, oh God, I forget the name of it now, but like his kind of talky, like, ranty stuff. Made me think of that band. Oh, fucking hell, what are they called? Shouldn't swear, sorry.
Reminds me of the Sleaford Art Brute.
No, oh. There's an old band called Art Brute, which if anyone wants to check out. But they did like, I didn't actually mind them that much. And I had the album, but it was all just like talking, but like ironically. So like one of the songs were, in a band, I'm in a band. Like, but obviously like, music but beneath underneath it. And it was a lot of that stuff. But it was all like kind of, I'm not really singing. I'm just talking. I'm saying things over the top of some rocky riffs. This is what we do. Hey, yeah, whatever. And it's all like trying to be a bit like, you know, trying to get across a weird, you know, postmodern thing.
How wild and wacky I am. Is this Art Brut?
Art Brut, yeah. So when I when I first heard Idols, I was kind of like, oh, it's this like fucking talky, not really singing, but like this is a bit more like punky. It's just someone like just shouting words. And I was like, it didn't really like get me. Get me going. And then, what was it? And then I listened to, someone else said, I was like, oh, is this really good, really good, really good. And I listened to it a bit more and I was like, I don't get into it. I don't understand it. And then, I think I told you about this. And then I saw them on Glastonbury, on BBC. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like suddenly I was like, oh, I get it. And then for that week, I just didn't stop listening to them. Like, it's just constant. Like everything was just on repeat. And all the things that to do with like the modern man and you're dealing with what it's like to be a modern man. And everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, boo hoo. But, the kind of pressures that go with it, you know, and suicide rates are the highest among young males, of, you know, whatever age it is. And this kind of speaks more to that, like the whole thing of like, you know, you're allowed to cry. It's all right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you see, same as women, you see shit on the TV. You don't have to fucking look like that. Just be yourself. You're great. And all this stuff, which sounds like fucking self-help, poncy bollocks, but against like a kind of punk rock background where this guy is like, oh, you will fucking love yourself or I'll hit you kind of thing. And I was just like, that's kind of just what it, that's kind of like the perfect line to kind of tow along. And then alongside it, you've got some really messy guitars that work really well together. And it's just great drumming and, you know, just generally and genuinely great songs. And it, but I like the way that each one kind of has it's a message and it speaks very much to that kind of British working class, you know, and I'd like to think, I'm basically not, I'm very much where I'm not working class anymore, but I've still got that little bit in me. And, you know, the way it kind of speaks to that, if that makes sense, of like...
You've got a little bit of a working class man in
you. Yeah, just a little bit in my deep dark
heart. Just a tip.
No further, please. It's as far as you're allowed. I don't know, just all... Yeah, just kind of the messaging around it. Like, they're very, very left-wing, liberal, which is what I like to think I am. I'm probably less so, but idealist-wise, I'm probably of that ilk. And the fact that, yeah, it's just like these quite punky, cool, fucking angry rock songs. And you can feel the sweat and the tension and the fucking emotion and the anger and like the love and the fear or whatever and all this stuff. You can hear it being spat out at you throughout this whole album, especially like live as well. And they're just great, really amazing band. And I think actually they're the most important band in terms of, you know, if we're talking about what music changing lives or whatever, probably the most important band that we've had in a while, because they're actually like, as you said, when we were speaking about them earlier on an earlier podcast episode, they're a bit everywhere. Not so much maybe now, but like not so long ago, you know, they were kind of all over the place. They're very much in your face. And I think it's got quite a positive message for people and, you know, for everyone as well, but specifically as I'm probably not a young male anymore, but, you know, from that kind of thing where it's like, yeah, I'm on board with this. I can totally, you know, relate to that kind of stuff. And like, you always hear a lot about, and again, it feels like it's like, yeah, white, cis, you know, middle-class male moaning kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there's just that element where it's like, it's something that's not specifically for that, but that I can still be a part of because I am still that. And I feel like someone's still being able to talk to me and fight for me a little bit, even if it's all that they're really fighting against is like the system, the man, whatever, or just like, you know, cultural embarrassments, which you should be okay with. And I've always got a kind of like issue with what with like what masculinity is. Like, I don't like it, like alpha male stuff and what it is supposed to represent. And I actually think it's, you know, like, I don't like all that stuff when I'm standing with a group of lads or whatever. And I'm just like, this is lame. Like, you're all fucking lame. And I'll fight you to the death about it. It's like, if you think it's really cool to think you're a lad or whatever and be bothering people or pissing up whatever or shouting out racist stuff or whatever and all this stuff, and you think that's what makes you a man, then you're a pissy little shit and I'll fucking kick the shit out of you if that's what it comes down to. And it's that kind of like attitude that I feel comes across maybe in this album, fighting the good fight almost.
Sounds incendiary. I do like a good angry man.
Yeah. I've probably spoke about that way too much. Sorry, there's a bit of a blabbering on, but
that's good.
But it's just because that's how it just kind of shot up, really. And I only really, it's 2018 it was released, but I didn't, yeah, as I said, I didn't really listen to it till last summer, really.
Do you like Pissed Jeans?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, funny enough, they were, there's a guy I know who, he runs Red Bull. He's Red Bull's editor-in-chief. Sorry, I should say. He doesn't run Red Bull, but it's in the magazine thing. And he used to run a magazine called The Flyer, which is part of the Flyer franchise, which closed down, which is, you know, Camden Barfly and all that stuff. And he used to take me to the odd gig and all this stuff, and used to send me shit as well. And one of them was Pissed Jeans. And I did like it, but yeah, I felt like it's less of a, feel like it's less important, if that makes sense. Songs are still good, but
there isn't a social message.
Yeah. It's just,
but it is very much like the nuts and bolts of being a middle-aged white man,
yeah,
in America.
Yeah. But I do,
I've got to pay my mortgage.
And I do enjoy all that, but I just think there's something, and that's kind of like half the thing for me with Idols, is I like that, I like everything about it. I like the songs itself. But for me, that it's the first time where I've listened to it, like songs and lyrics and what it's about. Like the first album, Brutality, is, you know, basically about his mum died and he had to look after his mum for ages. And that kind of comes through in the stuff that he sings about, you know, like lyrics to that, you know, about how fucking hard his mum worked and for what. And like, he was just a kid, he knew what the fuck was going on and all this stuff. And it's all these, like, it's very personal. And it's the same with this album as well. But this is a bit different in the sense of, as the album title suggests, joy is an act of resistance. I've been like, doesn't have to be like fucking neggy basically all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you can celebrate stuff and it could be a bit more up about it. And in fact, that will probably do as much damage as being angry about it will. And this kind of like weird jubilation and celebratory nature of it, as an act of resistance. So what's weird is that, you know, the album title works. The album title does what it says on the tin. Do you know what I mean? For like the whole message of the whole album. And there's nothing much you can say with like some of the rest of things, these things, you know, like, man alive. Within, without, it's all just like a bit like, that sounds pretty. But this is like, well, no, this is actually, this album is telling you joy is an act of resistance against fucking Tories.
Love yourself, people.
Yeah, exactly.
Success is the best form of revenge.
Well, that as well. Yeah, I think they've kind of fucked up a few things along the way, though, like in sense of, you know, what was it? They played the Mercury Music Prize, and I hate the Mercury Music Prize anyway. Like, I think it's fucking shit. But, like, as I was watching it, I was like, they're kind of like a bit messy. Like, I think they're not used to this kind of thing, and it showed. So when I was like, oh, you should watch, I said to a few people, oh, Idols are going to be on Mercury Music Prize, like, watch it. I could tell I was a bit like, I'm a bit embarrassed about it, actually, because it's like, this isn't like, this doesn't feel right. You could tell they're like almost too self-aware as they were playing.
Yeah.
And it's just, and as well with something like that, it's just people sitting on fucking tables.
Yeah.
Watching you.
That must be horrible.
Yeah. It's weird.
Actually, to go from, you know, being that kind of band and then shoved in a studio and like all the sound is different and all that kind of thing. It's a totally different vibe.
Mm.
Easy to fall flat on your face, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. So sorry about that, Dan. Let's go on to your number two.
Number two is Ariel Pink and his Pom Pom.
What should we listen to off it?
Not Enough Violence.
What's the view like from your bed? Well, a handful of what goes down where you got fed. And now it's time for pain, that's right. Now it's time for pain, that's right. Penetration. When we power plant bodies.
Pom Pom 2014. This album came out. I think I'd heard the album before this, Mature Themes, but I hadn't quite really, I don't know, hadn't quite landed, hadn't got into it that much. And then I saw a bit of hype around this one, and I just fell in love with it.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And it was also kind of like not a genre or type of music I'd really been that into at this point. You know, and obviously it's like we discussed a little while back with dedicated to Bobby Jameson. It's that mishmash of so many different musical styles. It's like a pastiche of a lot of kind of like 70s and 80s popular music.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it work. It's this like kind of kaleidoscopic whirl of stuff. And you've got 17 songs here, and each one is a proper song. Really good songwriting, interesting sounds, textures, some straight up kind of songs, some really weird stuff, you know, like Dinosaur Care Bears.
Yeah.
Really experimental. But everything sounds so good. It's so well produced and performed. So for me, like, this is my favourite Ariel Pink album. I think it's the most successful one. And you know, I knew someone who, well, I was going out with someone who, like, knew him.
Yeah.
And I was talking to her about it one evening, saying, like, oh, I wonder if it was, like his attempt at kind of doing a Todd Rundgren, A Wizard, A True Star, which is a kind of, it's similar in that it kind of goes through all these different musical styles.
Todd Rundgren.
And then it'll be Todd Rundgren. Like, if you like this album, I heartily recommend A Wizard, A True Star by Todd Rundgren. Because he did in 1974 an album where it was like, he was like a master producer, and he liked, you know, he'd come out of doing like quite straightforward, soulful pop and rock. And then he just like dumped all this extra stuff in and went like kind of a bit mad in the studio.
Right.
And it's kind of like schizophrenic, like this is from one song to the next. But I just loved, like, I think the first song on here that I heard was Picture Me Gone,
mm-hmm.
Which is obviously this like really quite heartfelt ballad. And I like that sometimes, like, there's songs here where it's almost like, it's almost cheesy.
Yeah.
But everything's just done with either like a wink or with actually quite a high degree of sincerity. So it always kind of works. The Picture Me Gone thing, when I first saw that, like, the video is amazing.
Yeah.
But then I saw also this thing of him like doing it with kids, like going to a school and he's like doing a sing along and they're like, they do a Q&A with him at the end and they're like,
who are you?
In the lyrics to Picture Me Gone, like, why are you talking about an iPhone? Yeah.
No, I don't know, I haven't seen that at all. That's so funny.
It's really cool. You should check it out. Because I was like, this is good, Picture Me Gone. Then I went and listened to like Not Enough Violence. Yeah. I was like, this is such a like, completely different song.
Yeah.
Like 80s kind of Cure, kind of like almost like goth rock.
Yeah.
And then you've got everything else in between.
Yeah. So
total journey, total amazing experience.
It is, yeah. And I feel the same way, basically. It's from beginning. So the kind of story behind this for me, if you remember, we were, well, you got me into him by just being like, oh, there's tickets for something. Didn't we have to choose between going to see him or going to see someone else?
Yeah, I had tickets for Dead Rider the same night.
Yeah. And oh, that's right, yeah. And you were like, oh, what would you want to go see? I remember I looked at the pictures, and it was an Aerial Pink's one, and this was on the Pom Pom tour. It was him kind of looking a bit Swedish, basically, but like like a Eurovision contest and nominee, and he was like lying down, like in a sexy 70s pose, but obviously he just looks like some fucking weirdo, and like shirt open or whatever. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And I listened to the songs. I was like, oh, this is fucking weird. And I remember you saying, oh, he's supposed to be a bit of a dick. Like when he's playing. And, I was like, no, yeah, well, I was like, I probably prefer this. Let's go see this. And the gig was loud, if you remember, but it was amazing as well at the same time. And, yeah, I was just like, man, this is amazing. And then, yeah, went back and listened to the album. And that just began, yeah, my love, unconditional love for this. And I really wish I'd gone to that gig, actually, just knowing, I mean, obviously, the whole point is I never would have, if that makes sense, but like knowing more of the songs. But, yeah, luckily we've seen him since then anyway. And he's got a much bigger following now. Than he did at Bethnal Green Working Men's Club.
Yeah.
And yeah, and every single song on this album, as you said, completely different. It's like, you know how sometimes when people sit in a studio or whatever, and it's like, this is the album sound. Like, we've set up the guitars and the drums or whatever. It's all going to sound like this. And we have the different songs, but it's going to sound like this. Each song is different, as in tonally, production-wise, everything about it. And as you said, you just go on a journey with each one. But what's great is that, yeah, as you said, it goes from cheesy to like, you know, I don't know, minimal to like rocky and all this stuff. And it shows his eclectic musical knowledge and taste and ability. And yet each song is amazing. Like, it's really great and in its own world, in its own sphere. And the fact that, as you said, you've got whatever it is, 14 of these tracks, 17, sorry, of these tracks together, and each one of them is great. It's like, I've never listened to an album like that before, or since. So yeah, Dedicated to Bobby Jameson is like almost like Pom Pom light, and it's still great, but I feel like this was just completely fresh, new, different, and exciting, basically. So yeah, completely agree with you on that count.
It's kind of like his White Album, except all the songs have been written by one person.
Yeah. And essentially, it feels
so
like it's
impressive.
Been, yeah, like performed by, I don't think it is, but I know, you know, there's an element where he would have performed some aspect of it, of each of these songs.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And that's what, like, this was the first, like, kind of studio band thing. And I suppose it wasn't really, because it's only Pink Sorted Graffiti.
He was coming off of, he'd done two for 4AD. So there's, was it Before Today and Mature Themes?
Yeah, that's right. That, which is this Haunted Graffiti moniker. Yeah.
I felt like, but that had established, like, what kind of work he could do, you know, on a budget in a studio. And then it was like, right, now I'm going to kind of make my opus. And like, this feels like his statement album. And like you said, I think Bobby Jameson feels a bit like a, it's just like a retread, a shorter retread and similar kind of thing, but a bit weaker.
Mm.
In a way, it would have been nice if he'd done something completely different.
Yeah. Well, kind of, how much different can you get? If you know what I mean? Like, it's already really different, and then you're going to, it's so varied anyway. Like, I don't know, it's weird.
Could have gone.
It's like having a pick straight. A mix and going, I kind of fancy something a bit different than a pick a mix. So we've kind of got everything in here. What do you want?
He could have gone back and just gone, I'm just going to do an album of polos.
Yeah.
Just like the best. Really boring, but the best.
God. Yeah.
I've got a copy of this, like the LP. I was just thinking, actually, you know, the fact that it's all pink, it does kind of emulate, I think it does emulate the White Album a bit. It's like his statement album. It's cool. That like pom-pom stuff is all like in kind of like glitter.
Oh, is it?
It's pretty sweet.
That's cool. Yeah.
And it's got all these like weird drawings and handwritten lyrics inside. Just kind of fun.
Yeah, it's so weird that like when we went to see him, he was just like sitting there at his like merch stall.
It's just like really glum.
Yeah, this like sweaty, bloated, blonde, like Kurt Cobain wannabe or whatever. And we're just like, oh my God, he just looks a fucking mess. And
I don't think he was at that stage.
And I remember he was selling his he was selling like handwritten lyrics or whatever to the album there as well. Like you can only get, yeah. I remember thinking, oh, that's interesting. Like, I hadn't seen anything like that before. And I was like thinking, oh, it'd be really cool to like, I've got that. Like, I wonder what that was. But yeah, maybe it was something that was like that.
I didn't finish my thought earlier on what I was going to say, which is I kind of mooted, oh, is this his sort of like attempt at doing a Todd Rundgren thing?
What, from apparently, Rocky IV?
Todd.
Sorry.
But apparently he said, well, it's kind of like, oh yeah, because I said that and she was like, oh, well, I'll just ask him. I've got him right here on like Facebook Messenger or something. But he was like, yeah, I think he was trying to do like a 70s kind of like, you know, like prog rock double album type thing.
What are you saying now, for Pom Pom?
Yeah, for Pom Pom. Right. He said he was trying to kind of, you know, those like slightly kind of pompous almost like prog albums of the 70s, you know, double album in like a big gatefold sleeve. I think that's what he was going for, was just like big statement.
Interesting.
Anyway, so yeah, that's Pom Pom.
Number two.
What's
which
your
leads
number
me
two?
To my silver award, which goes to
Pom-pom.
Mets. Yeah. Mets. 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 Ah. Let's have a listen.
We'll be right back.
Yes, I think this is the one that I was surprised that you didn't put on. Because, yeah, when this I listened to this album, it was like having a shotgun in my face. And I loved it. And beginning to end, I was like, it's high energy. It's really uplifting, as in, you know, I can go for a run and listen to this music and be pumped the whole way throughout. And it was, yeah, just that whole like kind of sub-pop grungy sound. Loved it. I thought it was great. There's no point talking about it too much. We did an whole episode on it, which people could go back and listen to. But yeah, just I still listen to it to this day. I would say it's one of the best rock albums for at least the last decade, if not the last ever. And yeah, I just really enjoyed every single aspect of it. I think it's dirty, raw. I love the drumming in it. And the songwriting wise, it's very similar to like what I've always kind of tried to recreate, but never really had the fucking balls, I don't think, to actually stick my dick in that far, as it were. And and just Metz kind of just have it all. And I'm surprised they're not, I mean, they're pretty big now, but I'm surprised they're not bigger. Unfortunately, I feel like, we're saying this on the show, each album after this has got a little bit worse each time.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, like, I always come back to this album, but other albums are still good. But yeah, nothing quite reached the heady heights of this debut for me.
Yeah, I didn't include them on my list. I think I like Metz, the band, more than I like any of their specific albums.
Mm.
You know, I like, you know, and I like seeing them live. But I can cherry pick like maybe like five songs from that album and a couple then from the second album and a couple from the third album. So I think that's why this is one album didn't quite make my cut.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
But it's still very good.
Yeah. But that was my
love it, don't we? We love a bit of Metz.
Yeah, we love Metz.
We always go and look at them.
And again, we did dedicate an entire episode to this album. So yeah, you can just scroll back and have a listen to that if you're interested. Dan, what's your number one? What's your winner?
Number one, numero one, was all the way back in 2010. And nothing better happened for 10 years. And it was The Fall with Our Future, Your Clutter.
Should we have a listen? Track in particular?
Berry?
Mary Berry. Here we go. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with The Fall. I know we've spoken about this before. Why out of there? Because they still made a bunch of albums, right, since that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how many. Yeah, probably like another five after this.
Right. So what kind of makes this one stand out for you?
Wow. Well, every Fall album is good. They haven't made a bad one. And it's just very personal. I just like all the songs on this one more than the songs on the other ones.
yeah,
I think there was quite there's a little bit more on this one, a sound, a little bit more introduction of that kind of like American alternative rock sound underpinning some of these tracks. I think a song like Chino that's got like quite a aggressive kind of arpeggiated guitar that reminds me of like the Jesus Lizard. And just bits and pieces woven throughout. Like there aren't any songs here that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of songs here that I absolutely love that are probably, I'd probably put them in my favorite Fall songs of all time.
Okay.
And the reason why, you know, this is in my top three, I put it at number one, really, I think, in acknowledgement to pay tribute to Marky Smith.
Yeah.
I was meant to see them in London about a month before he died.
Right.
And we had tickets. And the night before, I can't remember where they were playing the night before, that got cancelled.
Hmm.
And I was literally waiting all day, waiting and checking, you know, the internet and seeing if there was any news. Because I was sure, I just thought it's going to get cancelled.
Yeah.
And it got cancelled.
Right.
A couple of, you know, in the afternoon maybe. And I remember thinking, that's it. Probably right. Not going to get another chance. And within about a month or so, he passed away.
Fuck.
So it's a real shame. But I saw them a couple of times. Probably would have liked to have seen them more.
Yeah.
Actually, I kind of got the title of this album wrong. Were great. You know, Marky Smith loved tinkering with stuff.
Right.
And he loved being a thorn in the side of, like, producers and engineers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of, like, several albums where I think the original mix maybe leaked, or people said stuff about it and heard it, and just almost like in a like a fit of petulance, he'd be like, no, we're going to completely change it now, and I'm going to remix it and screw it up. And what I love is like some of the like weird production quirks and things that are in here.
Right.
And people go, oh, what's going on? It sounds crap. It's a bit like the Aerial Pink thing. It's actually like really, there's a lot of conscious artistic decisions going into some of the weird like dropouts and odd stuff. And like sometimes levels seem strange.
Right.
But initially it was called Our Future, Your Clutter. And then, yeah, when this version, the final version actually came out, it's called Your Future, Our Clutter.
Okay.
Which I like. I like it. It sounds like basically, you know, this album's like a load of rubbish that's going to be cluttering up your house.
Yeah. That's cool.
The vinyl version's different as well, which is quite interesting. I do like that kind of thing. If you've got the LP, you get two extra songs and a slightly different track listing.
Okay. That's interesting. Have a different track listing as well.
But, you know, you could pick any Fall album, really, and put it in your top 10. But for me, this is the one that I've listened to the most and enjoyed the most.
Yeah, maybe it's the one I should jump in at. I don't know, every time I listen to the Fall, I'm just like, I don't think I get it. You know, I'm like, I kind of get it. I don't really get it.
Yeah, it's like, it's like they're a Marmite band. Like people that love them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people. It's just, yeah, a big turn off. And obviously, you know, Marky Smith's totally idiosyncratic approach to singing. It's a bit like they're a band. It's like a magic eye, though. Like once it's popped, you've got the technique.
Yeah.
And you can see it. You just,
transfixed.
It all makes sense. Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. Well, that was your number one album for the 2010s. And my one, which is going to be a real anticlimax, is Aerial Pink, Pom Pom. How's about that?
No surprise. I almost put it as number one as well.
I mean, we've already spoken about it, but again, a bit of a cheat, maybe having two Aerial Pink albums, but I do think it's well deserved.
Yeah, well done, Mr. Pink.
Yeah, it's done really well. And I had one of those Spotify decade wrap ups or whatever they're called, where they just use their algorithms to pull out what you listen to the most. And Aerial Pink won as my most listened to artist or whatever by a mile.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't remember who was number two. I think it was Nirvana, actually, which is, you know, Jesus, showing my fucking eclectic taste.
But yeah, there's no real surprise that Ariel Pink, you know, won that, just because it's like, I feel like so much stuff out there and I never get bored of even his old stuff. And as I said, like, I probably still listen to Doldrums more than anything, you know, and I highly recommend, if you haven't heard of Ariel Pink, if you have, you know, you've kind of got a taste for it and you want a bit more, go for it. And it's literally, you could have any taste in music and there'll probably be a song there for you.
Totally.
You know, it's not like, you know, he doesn't do one thing really. So it's really like, I think part of what makes him so great is that even if he bounces around all these genres and stuff, he's still got a very strong pop sensibility. Like, he's very good. He's very good at coming up with a tune, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what it all essentially kind of boils down to, is that, yeah, it's kind of still, even no matter how it's produced, how it sounds, what he's doing with it, it's still a popular like sound, in a sense of like a melody that actually, you know, stays with you.
Yeah, these are good songs. They're hooky.
Yeah, exactly. And he knows that, and he knows what he's good at, and he's just
he knows.
He's an enigma of a man. So that's it, man. That was long.
You should. Are you going to send him like a New Winter reward or something?
Okay, I'll send him a
most
kiss.
Listened to on my Spotify playlist award.
Yeah, I'll send him with a sticky tissue as well and go, guess what's in here? These are not two pom-poms, but you might think they are. Just two crunching tissues. These are my pom-poms.
Disgusting. Dirty man.
Yeah, any final thoughts on this decade, music-wise?
Oh, Lord. Well, a personal reflection, a rather sad one, as I get older. I probably listen to less new music. I say I listen to more music that was new to me than I ever have. Mm. But most of it is from the 60s and 70s. So I've been working my way back through the decades as the years rolled on. And so, yeah, I didn't listen to as much stuff. And I'm really aware that there's all this great music that I still haven't heard. Like two of my best friends, you know, Ben and William, I asked them what were their albums of the decade, and they both picked the same number one, which was The National.
Oh, you'd say The Fool. You meant it's you. Right, yes. Yeah, I've never really listened to The National and thought, oh, great. Again, people love them. People really like them.
So I haven't even heard that. And like, there are a few honourable mentions. You know, like, I really enjoyed The OCs, but nothing quite dented my kind of like list. I really like PJ Harvey, Let England Shake.
That was on and off my top 10 as well.
And I listened to a lot of like Deerhoof, who have been one of my favourite bands over the last 15 years. Didn't quite, again, loads of songs that I loved, but no one album that was quite there. Melvins, one of my favourite bands, really didn't enjoy their output over the decade. So yeah, it was a lot of like trying to hang on to old bands that I knew I liked and sort of like watching some of their stuff slide away. But I think, yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun digging around, listening to old stuff. Maybe 2020, I need to get back in the saddle and actually keep up with the fresh material of the new generation.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem, is that I feel like there's nothing that's been that exciting that's kind of come out over the last 10 years. The 10 years before, 2000, 2010, which I would kind of signal as, which was the kind of decline of the music industry. Like, I know it had been steady declining really a bit before that, but it was where it kind of tanked, basically. If you look at 2000, where it was in 2000, where it was in 2010, you know, file sharing, whatever, all playing a part in this, but just generally how everything was shifting. Like coming into 2010, like the music was just completely different, and the way people were consuming it And I hate the word consumers, but still. Yeah, exactly. And all this. And yeah, so the last decade, we've been kind of reeling from that a little bit. And I think a lot of the music has suffered for it. There's no real risk takers. And when there are risk takers, they're not really given that much attention, to be honest. There's been a lot of, I mean, and saying this, it's kind of the same with Aerial Pink as well, but there's been a lot of just parodying like previous music genres because there's no scene happening. There's no one that's got an identity. And even when stuff, it's like, oh, you've got people, you know, I saw like Kanye West and Beyonce or whatever, and all these people have got stuff. It's like, yeah, but they're still not really doing anything completely new. There's no real movement. There's not anything that people are clinging to. They're just hanging off old genres, or they're going back and just putting things out of other bits and pieces and trying to push them together new. I mean, there was like, what, dubstep? And as in like Skrillex and all that stuff. I mean, that was a, I felt like that was a kind of an evolution of electronic music, kind of going into like metal and a punky kind of electro sound or whatever. But again, that wasn't really much of a movement or a scene, and it was just sounded just too similar.
And even that was an evolution out of like didn't Liam Howlett do something? It was like Girls, that track Girls, Prodigy.
Yeah, it's quite dubstep sounded.
Being the beginning of dubstep.
Yeah, and it's to be honest, there's a lot that I mean, just Prodigy generally, to be honest, it comes. A lot of that would kind of stem from that, the kind of way it mixed like rock and EDM or whatever. So again, it was
like chill wave, vapor wave.
Yeah. And it, but again, all, that's kind of,
we
a
like
bit,
it, but it's basically trying to evoke a bygone time, isn't it? And like,
yeah, it's nostalgia heavy.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really that's happened. And but I'd be quite happy to be wrong. That's what I mean. If there's stuff happening and I'm not aware of it, then great, I want to hear about it. So, you know, do let me know. But as far as I'm concerned, personally, there's not been that much great stuff the last 10 years, unfortunately. Just some honourable mentions.
You sound like an old man. It's great.
I know. Well, that's what I feel like I'm turning into, right? But it's like we lived through, like, the 80s and the 90s. And even when I think of things like, I was thinking this the other day, I was reading about whatever, just like a general top 10 of whatever it was at the end of like the 80s or something. And it's like every one of these is like a classic, like a classic hit. And you just look at the charts today and you're just like, there's always just like one track, which, you know, maybe but might be famous or whatever. The rest is just like nothing.
Dross.
Or like won't get, Dross or something that'll be Fodder. Completely forgettable. You know, but then I say that and I think of things like, you know, in the 60s, you know, when people think of like, well, in the 70s as well, but it's like, you know, all these like, there's Rolling Stones and Beatles and all this stuff, yes, who were like popular, but all these like, you know, cool musicians, all this cool music that came out, they weren't like charting. It was like fucking Tom Jones, and like, it was the same song, really, because it would just be like, you buy a song and then someone would just fucking cover it. And that song would appear by four different artists on the same top 10 list for that week, which is mad. That it wasn't represented within the charts, but that's not what we remember. We remember like the actual cultural significant stuff that came out of that movement, not what was just the highest selling thing at that fucking time. So maybe there's something like that going on that I'm not aware of. I don't know. But yeah, I think we're in a time where identity is very fluid at the moment and no one's kind of, there's just no scene or movement. There's no like collaboration, which is pushing each other. And usually that's indicative of a location. You know, what's the New York scene at the moment? Don't know. Because it's probably so fucking varied and split up that there's no one kind of, there's no actual scene happening. There's nowhere where people could fucking play for a start or live. Yeah. So yeah, I think we kind of get into like a culturally dead time. And it's weird because in the industry and especially in advertising industries and stuff like that, people keep harking on about the fact that creativity is alive and inspiring and it's everywhere. And you have these like seminars. I'm like, you're all fucking rich idiots, like at the top of your fucking game, who can like sit around there and talk about how great your creativity is because there's this brand or this brand's doing something different. And it's like, But that's great, whatever, that you're doing that. But what is like grassroots creativity? What's happening there? Where's the real like inspiring, energizing, youthful, forward thinking future of creativity? And I don't know where that is.
Likewise. It's not here, that's for sure.
Diatribes, exactly. some kind think of like about, little, oh, sorry, go on.
Like you think about the rate of development of music, you know, over the last, what, 70 years.
Mm.
So 50s, you know, rock and roll, 60s, so much. Like just from 65 to like 68, total revolution. Mm. Think about how different something, you know, the pop charts in 1975 were to like 1985.
Yeah.
And then again throughout the 90s. And I could, but, you know, I can listen to something from 2005 and listen to something like now.
Yeah.
And I can't tell the difference.
Absolutely correct.
So,
I don't think that will ever happen again. Like I was saying to my missus the other day, is that what people, like the boomer generation, okay, boomer, they lived through a time where, as you said, like these things happened, there's cultural shifts happening all the time and very quickly. And as a culture was basically evolving at a very rapid rate, it's very reactionary. And that's basically kind of slowed down now. We're coming out at the end of it. And I don't think it will be like for a very long time. Like I don't, obviously it's not happened just because of the way technology and the human evolution works. I don't think we'll get something that happens as fast as that, or as significant as those changes, you know, for a long while.
Yeah,
surely. Like it's got to be the next step. Like what's the next kind of, you know, revolution with it all, is it? And that's the thing, like you think, is it a new instrument? Can't be. And that's the problem with like, not problem, but that's the thing with like keyboards and synthesizers. The whole point is it can synthesize any sound at any note. It's only so many notes, so many sounds, and a synthesizer can do them all.
That's like, you know, now access to technology and access to a whole catalog of 70 years of music has meant that, rather than pushing forward and being innovative, a lot of music is about sort of consolidating old sounds and mashing them up and repackaging and sort of regurgitating them. I don't know. Often it takes a seismic kind of like cultural and societal event maybe to actually push the envelope on something new.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is it usually comes from the youth, right? Like kind of bring it out with the old, in with the new. And I don't know, you know, what that might be, or even if they're that bothered. Like that's the thing as far as reading. Oh yeah. I was reading the other day about how part of this kind of cultural revolution was to do with the fact that people were like standing up for something and like going to, you know, all these protests or whatever, and there was like real stuff kind of happening. And is it going to become one of those things where we, like everything circular, we're going to go like back, you know, people say we're already there, like to being like more of a racist country, as in, well, America, like a lot of people are saying, aren't they, but the whole thing. And then it will kind of come back and there'll be more of that, and maybe there'll be another movement out of that. It'd be reflected upon what's going on in society. I don't know. I'm always reading this little hodgepodge of articles and thoughts or whatever here and there, and I get myself confused about it. But yeah, basically in the last 10 years, fuck all happened.
The best thing we can do is like Cells make an album.
Yeah, another
and,
one.
And reinvigorate the music scene.
Yeah, but what would that, I'm like genuinely, like what would, what would it be? Like I wouldn't even know where to start with that. And that's the thing, is that even with all like, you know, rock and punk or whatever, dance and all this stuff, it's like still got to have a good song though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Still got to be based around that. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is why like when me and Rich do our like noise stuff as Static Static, it's just because it's like, well, it's just turning the whole thing on his head a little bit. And, you know, we just, it's a case of like not of making music that's not music. What is it? It's just sound. And then what's that? What is music? What is a song? And yeah, it's weird. Anyway, some kind of albums that honorable mentions from my side. Frankie Rose, Interstellar.
Who's that?
Frankie Rose was part of Crystal Stilts. And she had a solo thing. And I remember I was filming at the Lexington in London.
Oh, yes.
And there's a guy from Nokia. We were doing a Nokia phone thing. And I looked and on the thing, I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, Frankie Rose is playing tonight. I love Frankie Rose. And I was like, oh, do you want to go? And I was like, this is the manager of the Lexington. I was like, yeah. And it's like, okay, yeah. So I was like, oh, yeah, put me down for like a couple of tickets. And she's like, okay, cool. And the Nokia guy was like, yeah, okay, great. And yeah, so I might come as well. I was like, okay, cool. Well, let's go back to the office. So I was talking back to our production office and he just basically sat there, waited. And I was like, yeah, okay, I guess I'm taking this guy out for the evening. So it's just me and him at this Frankie Rose gig. Yeah, with his Nokia phone. Bless him, he was really sweet though. And he was in love. Like, he was with Nokia you. All the way with me.
Oh.
He was in love with his Nokia phone. I remember he was like, okay, take a photo of this plant and let's see who could do it first because I had an iPhone or whatever. And I was like, okay. And he was like, there, see, it's already ready to post. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And I was thinking, I'm not like, one, I'm not too bothered that you'd be able to do it like 3 seconds quicker than me.
Wow.
Two, who the fuck needs to put up a post that fast? And it's things like that where I think, Nokia, that's where you don't really understand.
Yeah.
Like, that's why Instagram took off, because people wanted to make, people were willing because they fucking use their phones all the time in front of it to like actually put on filters and make it look a bit nice rather than like, just get it up.
Yeah.
About speed. It's like, no, that's just you not understanding your audience. Anyway, Frankie Rose, Interstellar. Yeah, so it's that kind of like a surfy rock. It's really nice to listen to, actually. Her voice is great. And it's a bit dreamy in places, but lots of wet reverb. And it's like Crystal Stilts, but less droney and more poppy. And it was on my number 10 for a long while. But it did fall off, unfortunately. But yeah, it is a real honourable mention. A bit boring, but Arcade Fire, Suburbs, strong album. I always like Arcade Fire, really. I'm never in love with them. I still don't really understand how they're such a huge band, but that first album was great. And they continue to make quality albums. I think that's kind of what's good about them, is they're consistent. Like each album, I'm never like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, it feels like a very like Q kind of album or something, if that's still a magazine that's going.
Huh.
But I'm still like, with each album, I'm like, there's a couple of really strong fucking cool tracks here, and they're really good live as well. So I did get it. But yeah, Suburbs is a good one. Randomly, the Tron soundtrack, Tron Legacy, by Daft Punk. And it is a fucking great album. And it's, for me, it's their last good album, because I don't really like anything they released post that. And yeah, I think it's worth getting a mention. I didn't really put it on for the sake that, you know, it is an album, but it's a soundtrack. So I was like, I'm not sure if it fits. I'm just going to leave it out, but I thought I'd mention it anyway.
Yeah, qualify. Did that come out before Random Access?
It did.
Memories?
Yeah.
Or?
It did, yeah. Yeah. So, but they'd, you know, there's a lot of orchestra in this one, and it really does work. And I actually really liked Tron Legacy as a movie. But yeah, this was fucking cool. Worked in the movie. I actually listened to the album. It came out before the film did, and I had tickets for like the opening night at the fucking BFI IMAX to go and see Tron Legacy, the Waterloo one, because I was so obsessed with it. And yeah, when I got this album and I listened to it on CD, and the big, like, it kind of starts with Jeff Bridges, like, the grid, blah, 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 blah. It's like, doon, doon, doon. It starts up, and I was like, it's like, dun, 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 dun. I was just like, oh, my God. Like,
it sounds fucking huge. It's going to be epic. And yeah, it's still got some amazing Daft Punk things, but it's very like, it's dark synth before dark synth. And yeah, it's big, it's epic. And it feels like an actual score. And it's very rare that you listen to a soundtrack, like a score, literally it is a score. And you're like, there are songs here. This is a song with a hook and a thing that I remember. Fucking brilliant.
Sounds good.
It's really good. Randomly Eagles as well. Do you remember their first album?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, you recommended that to me.
Yeah.
I liked that.
I still like it. Second album was atrocious, but this first one was still good, but I think it didn't last. Like, it's quite, I've listened to it too much too quick, and now when I listen back to it, I'm just bored by it, and it just sounds a bit monotonous to me now. But at the time, I really liked it. I was like, I listened back to it recently, I was like, nah, it's of its time. Like, I'm done with it, I think, you know? It's okay. And it's fine. Foles, Total Life Forever, it's an okay album. It was after Antidotes, or whatever the first album was. And there's a couple of tracks, like Spanish Sahara, which is the first single they released off Total Life Forever. I still think it's an incredible song, and it's a great introductory, even though it's like it's midway through the album, I think. It's a great introductory song to what became the album. It's very slow, great build, still has that Foles sound, but it feels like they matured as songwriters, and the whole album feels like that. Unfortunately, they went way far down the safe route and released crap pretty much after that. But this was that turning point where it was like, we still kind of got that early edgy vibe, but we've matured our sound, and it's quite a cool mix, but some works better than others. That's kind of it, I guess, for like Charles. I'd say Charles Bradley's I've got here, which is pretty good. Fondal Park, yeah. Kavinsky Kavinsky Outrun. Yeah. John Mouse, as we were saying, pitiless version of ourselves or whatever.
I was surprised, actually. I thought that was going to pop up.
Yeah, it did. It was on there for a bit and just kind of got pushed down with other stuff. I think because it's, don't know, I just felt other ones were a bit stronger, to be honest, or just had more of a connection with. Future Islands, maybe. Cat's Eyes is good. You might like that, actually, because it's the guy from Horrors. And this is pure 60s. Like, the way that Horrors is a bit 60s, this is pure, like, a 60s album. It's him and this woman. And I think they've only done two albums or whatever, but it's called Cat's Eyes.
I'm looking at it now. Cool cover.
Yeah, it's really cool. They've very much gone down that road. You'll really like it, actually. You should stick that on later.
It looks like a Dario Argento a film poster.
that's on purpose. Some Ty Segall stuff, Future Cop.
Then I said, what was your favourite Ty Segall?
Is it Melted?
Yeah. I put Emotional Mugger. I had that like in my top 10.
It was
a bit.
Yeah, he's done a lot recently, I suppose, in the last 10 years.
Emotional Mugger was a bit more like unpleasant, I think, in some ways.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like really, really early Devo.
Yeah. It's funny. Recently, I got a thing coming up on my Spotify going, oh, new releases. And I saw someone said like Devo, and it was, I can't remember what it's called now. I pressed play without even thinking of it. And I was like, wow, they've really gone in a new direction here. And then there was a guy like rapping in another language on it.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this? And it's just some like Italian gangster or whatever has called himself Devo. And Spotify have attached it to the official Devo account. And so I'm thinking, fucking hell, you must have got a lot of hits just from that alone. And I think that's kind of it. I was looking at Metronomy, English Riviera, but didn't really look at that much. Place to Bury Strangers, Worship. Yeah. That kind of felt there. Also, the Drive soundtrack. Probably would have won it, but had it been on it. But I don't think that counts either, because again, it's just kind of like a compilation of songs.
Yeah.
That's it, I think. And then some of the stuff that you mentioned as well, PJ Harvey and whatever. So yeah, that's been a good old chunk of time now, Dan. I think we can safely say goodbye to the 2010s.
Lay them to rest.
Yeah, I think they're done.
Farewell. You were a decade that
you was. Happened.
It happened, yeah. you were time that passed. Not particularly pleasantly.
No. Well, you know, we got some albums out of it. Well done to Aerial Pink and The Fall.
Yeah, well done, guys.
A round of applause. So for anyone that wants to contact us and have a go at us and tell us how shit and wrong we are, you can email us at newwinterpodcast@gmail.com or go to Instagram or Twitter @anewwinter. You can also sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/anewwinter. And yeah, for those who don't know, there's an actual original ring versus the remake ring episode up there. I compare the two and go into a bit of a deep dive about them both. You might be interested in that, Dan, actually.
Yeah, like a bit of ring.
Yeah, you like a good ring. And that's it. So thanks for joining us. And yeah, should we just go through our top 10 actually one more time?
Go on, then.
Right, you go first.
Okay. At number 10, King Buzzo with a forgotten name of the title, This Machine Kills Artists. 9 was Beak with 3rd Beak album. Number 8 was King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Gumboot Soup. Tasty. Number 7, Radiohead, A Moon-Shaped Pool. Number 6, Black Star by that lovable rogue, David Bowie. Moving into the top 5, number 5 was Richard Dawson, Peasant. Number 4, Go Go Penguin, V2. Number 3 was Swans, My Father Will Lead Us Up a Rope to the Sky. Number 2, Aerial Pink with His Pom-Pom. And at number 1 was The Fall, Your Future, Our Clutter.
Your bumhole, my butter. My top 10, number 10, is Washed Out, Within and Without. Number 9, Cloud Nothings, Here and Nowhere Else. I always feel like mine seem to be very location-based in title. Everything, Everything, Man Alive. Number 7, Twilight Sad, No One Wants to Be Here and No One Wants to Go Home. I do love that title. It's just like I'm just pitching myself at a party saying exactly that. Number 6, Wild Beasts, Smother. Number 5, Aerial Pink, dedicated to Bobby Jameson. Number 4, Kurt Vile, Smoke Ring for My Halo. Number 3, Idols, Joy as an Act of Resistance. Number 2, Mets. And number 1, Aerial Pink, Pum Pum. Pum Pum. And that's it, guys. So thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening as well,
thanks,
guys.
For the listens.
And thanks, Sam.
You're welcome.
And now let's go boldly on into a brave new decade.
Yeah, I've listened to no albums yet released this year, so I can't wait what it's going to throw up in my face. Lovely. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Winter cults.
Culture.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.